This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, this is Diane Rourke, your guest host tonight on The People Speak. And the guests tonight are Ed Loomis and J. Kirk Wiebe. They're both former NSA employees. And they also were raided, along with Bill Binney and Tom Drake, who were on last week's show. So we're going to discuss further the domestic surveillance issue and try to get in a little more detail about it. Why don't we start with Ed? Could you introduce yourself, Ed?
Yeah, my name's Ed Loomis, and I live here in Baltimore, Maryland. And I spent 37 years working for NSA as a cryptologic computer scientist and retired in the end of October of 2001.
And how about you, Kirk?
Hi, my name's Kirk Wiebe. I also retired from NSA after some 32 years of service, walking out the door along with Bill Binney and Ed Loomis on Halloween Day of 2001 in disgust after, one, the events of 9/11, and two, information that the United States was turning its apparatus inwardly against the American people.
Yes, and I knew both Ed and Kirk, as well as Bill and Tom, before 9/11. They came to me and told me what was going on, among other people. And I worked for Congress, and I went to Congress and tried to convince them that they needed to restore the privacy controls that were deliberately removed when they went and applied it to domestic surveillance. Actually, Bill Binney had and Ed Loomis had devised the system on which NSA modeled its capability. And I think maybe the first thing we should do here is ask Ed if he could start by summarizing what information Mr. Snowden has revealed, and so what we know about this publicly.
Well, since the 6th of June, Edward Snowden has revealed some shocking details about what NSA has been up to since shortly after 9/11. We've learned that since October 2001, Verizon, Sprint, and AT&T each have supplied phone call metadata to NSA on approximately 81% of all international calls made to and from the United States, plus virtually all calls transiting their phone lines between U.S. parties.
And those U.S. parties, by the way, of those three companies amount to about 260 million people. So, Ed, continue.
Since 2007, Internet traffic metadata has been supplied to NSA by at least nine technology companies. Microsoft began supplying that data in 2007, followed by Yahoo in 2008, Google, Facebook, and Paltalk in 2009, YouTube in 2010, AOL and Skype in 2011, and Apple in 2012. Conversation content has also been supplied by the phone companies for those phone numbers associated with an approved terrorist target, regardless of nationality or location. Lastly, I recall the Guardian reported that the metadata supplied included that of Europeans, and that the U.S. had hacked into commercial networks of private businesses, universities, and hospitals. The Guardian also reported that the British intelligence agency, GCHQ, had conducted mass collection of internet data as well.
Yes, and I believe recently also Snowden released information about the Brazilian target as well, that we were collecting widespread information on Brazil. Perhaps, Kirk, maybe you could clear up some confusion that has reigned in this area about the Thin Thread program, which Ed and Bill put together, the Trailblazer program, and the so-called Stellar Wind program, which is this domestic surveillance program. How do you distinguish those, and how do they overlap?
Well, let's begin with Thin Thread, which essentially was a small prototype capability that the organization, a small organization of researchers, put together along with computer scientists and Bill Binney, Ed Loomis, and some programmers. I joined the organization after Thin Thread was already basically up and running, and was amazed at what these fine people had put together. In general, it was a demonstration to show how near real-time data could be processed and exploited for intelligence purposes while protecting the identity of U.S. citizens, innocent citizens.
Right, and one of the big advances was that it would bring NSA into the digital age, away from the analog telephone technology and into the digital age, so that it could both process in real time everything, and it could database it and arrange it so that an analyst could easily withdraw information on a given target and so on. Ed, why don't you continue with that?
Thin Thread actually could take raw internet traffic off, and this was, mind you, these were targeted against foreign adversaries, not U.S. But and there were situations where American citizens were in foreign countries that were being actually looked at, and Thin Thread would actually anonymize the IP address, the DNS name of the communicants immediately upon receipt. So,
and by anonymize,
it would encrypt
yes.
the identities so that no one would be able to go in and find out who the communicant was, unless, of course, they had probable cause that this individual or this party was associated with a terrorist. So it was a very secure system. However, the problem with it was that our NSA lawyers did not feel that it was it met their security model. All the NSA lawyers at the time had been grown up through the analog era, where all the communications were point-to-point, and they were passed over twisted pair telephone wires. So they were kind of naive when it came to the fact that the Internet was a massive worldwide system in which many, many foreign communicants, their data actually transited the United States. And they just would not, they couldn't wrap their minds around that fact that even though a signal could be coming into the United States, that it could have been all foreign parties that were communicating.
Also, Thin Thread was up and running sufficient to begin an initial operating capacity in 1999, in preparation for the 2000 Millennium Threat. And
only one subsystem was.
Okay, one subsystem.
Right.
But NSA denied the right to deploy it.
Correct. Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, Thin Thread actually did not begin as a system. There were five components to it, but it didn't really begin until July of 2000 when my boss came to me and asked me to put something together that would provide an early capability for Trailblazer. So I had already had four activities. One of them was operational. Three others were had already been, the research on them had been completed by July 2000. Had one other subsystem that I felt could really add a lot of value to it, and that was still on. That research was still underway by my top programmer, and so in July of 2000, when my boss told me to put something together, I strung these five subsystems together, went back to him with a presentation. I said, "This is what we could do in fairly short order." And he said, "That's great." So he went off and sold it to the Trailblazer program office.
Now, to interject here, Trailblazer was NSA's official modernization program, and it was having difficulty getting off the ground. In fact, it always did have difficulty getting off the ground. But to summarize this, the suggestion that they use this technology was very, very poorly received. They considered it to be a threat. So could you explain now, Ed, what Stellar Wind is?
Yeah. I'm going to have to refer to what I had gleaned from a lot of the open source press that has referenced Stellar Wind. It first came out on the scene a couple of years ago when the FBI director, Robert Mueller, referred to the Stellar Wind program as a very valuable asset for the FBI.
Let me interject here. The rest of us knew about it right after 9/11. It was the domestic and foreign surveillance program that was initiated after 9/11. So if you could just briefly say what it apparently involved. PRISM and the Verizon program were part of this. But there were similar predecessor capabilities. Could you talk about that and distinguish? A lot of people think Stellar Wind is Trailblazer, but it is not.
Right. It had nothing to do with Trailblazer, actually. Stellar Wind was a carbon copy of another system that we had assembled in the SARC back in 1999. And from what I understand, Stellar Wind actually was a reaction to the 9/11 attack, and it was the carbon copy of it, an operational system was put together under the name Stellar Wind in October of 2001, and it was also referred to as the President's Surveillance Program, also known as PSP. It was more or less a duplicate copy of a system that had already been operational and was fully FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, compliant, meaning that it met the General Counsel's acid test as far as protecting the identities of any possible U.S. citizens.
Yes, and as I mentioned earlier, Civil liberties protections were deliberately removed, and those included not only immediate encryption of U.S. persons' identities and phone numbers, but also it included a tracking system whereby any access to the database was tracked and recorded so that people could know where they were going. So if they were violating somebody's civil rights, it would all be on the record. So that was part of that. I think we better move on right now. And so what has happened is Stellar Wind involves a whole lot of programs, a whole lot of compartments, compartmented information, and a lot of sub-compartments to which you have to have specific access to get into them. And it was very closely held. But it has taken 12 years for some reason. This program has existed for 12 years, domestic surveillance involved, and nobody got upset about it. Tom and Bill in particular, and Kirk as well, have been trying to raise people's awareness of this and generate concerns for privacy, but it just didn't happen until Snowden revealed the actual documents. Now, why do you think the administration got away with this for 12 years? Kirk, could you give a little bit on your opinion on this?
Well, one of the readily apparent reasons are the various names that we are, during this conversation, bantering about, like Trailblazer, Thin Thread, Stellar Wind, TSP, PSP, Prism. I mean, all these are cover names for programs that have specific definitions, and it's very difficult to track their evolution if the names are changed. And that's all done on purpose. It's all smoke and mirrors, partly done for good security reasons. But it also makes it difficult for people who want to perform oversight to know exactly what NSA is talking about in a coherent way.
Yes, I think one of the things that has happened is that when the administration is answering questions about this, and the question started really after the New York Times revealed the program, part of the program, in December of 2005, they often would refer to only one small part of the program and confine their answer to that, and everybody thought they were making assurances about all of the program. Ed, why don't you talk about some of the little tricks the administration was using?
Sure. I'll begin with some of the deceit that has come out of the administration. Michael Hayden, who was the director of NSA from 1999 to 2005, in January 2006, when he was the principal deputy director of the National Intelligence, he was questioned by the National Press Club over the New York Times domestic surveillance article that surfaced the collection of private U.S. citizen communications absent court-authorized probable cause-based warrants. General Hayden took issue with the reporter's allegation of Fourth Amendment rights having been impugned, and he responded to the reporter's question with, "It's a reasonableness standard in the Fourth Amendment, and so what you've raised to me in terms of quoting the Fourth Amendment is an issue of the Constitution. The constitutional standard is reasonable, and we believe, I am convinced, that we are lawful because what it is we are doing is reasonable." Now, I didn't make that up. This was a four-star general, formerly the director of NSA, actually said and truly believed the legal standard to be one of reasonableness and not one of no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause. That's very alarming for our nation's most senior intelligence officer to have made such a broad and unilateral interpretation of the Fourth Amendment.
Yes, and what turned out to be was that they weren't even getting warrants at all.
Correct.
Right? They weren't even bothering to get a warrant, and they were operating this under the president's commander-in-chief powers.
Correct.
And another thing that General Hayden did at that press conference was to refer to the leaked part, which was only U.S. persons were collected only when a foreign suspected terrorist called the United States. And that was relatively non-controversial. But what wasn't revealed was all this other domestic collection unconnected to foreign entities. And whenever General Hayden answered a question, he would refer back simply to the so-called terrorist surveillance program, which was named that at the time, and was only a small part of the president's surveillance program.
Correct. And then General Alexander, who is the director of NSA now, following the publication of a Wired magazine article that quoted both Kirk and Bill Binney, back in March of 2012, General Alexander was called to testify before the House Committee on Intelligence and questioned by Congressman Hank Johnson whether NSA was collecting Internet records of Americans. General Alexander responded that NSA had no capacity to do so with emails in the United States. When his question was followed up with, does the NSA intercept Americans' cell phone conversations, Google searches, text messages, Amazon.com orders, bank records? General Alexander responded with no to each question individually. His responses, although by virtue of NSA technical jargon, may have been truthful, they were misleading to the public in that the actual collection, according to the Snowden leak, had been performed by the telephone and technology companies who participated in PRISM as lawfully authorized under Sections 215 and 702 of the FISA Amendments Act and the Patriot Act.
I think that's an important point you've made, Ed, that a lot of this was deliberately misleading. They knew how the public would interpret it, and they wanted them to interpret it as benign. So they played a lot of word games. And there were a lot of them later also.
Right. And then Jim Clapper, who's the current director of National Intelligence, this past March, when he was testifying before a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, Senator Wyden asked him, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? Clapper responded, no, sir. And when the senator followed up asking, it does not, Clapper replied, not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently perhaps collect, but not wittingly. And then when a National Journal reporter questioned him in early June, just last month, about his March reply to Senator Wyden, Clapper responded with, what I said was, the NSA does not voyeuristically pore through U.S. citizens' emails. I stand by that. And more recently, when questioned by an NBC News reporter, Clapper referred to his March response with, and I'm quoting this, I responded in what I thought was the most truthful, or least untruthful, manner by saying no.
Yes, it became outright lies by the end. And so that leads us to the next topic, which is the administration's contention that there is rigorous oversight by all three branches. I think Americans want to trust their government, and they have taken these assurances on their face. But why don't we discuss that? Kirk, how about you chime in on this? What do you think about the oversight, the quality of the oversight? And we only have a couple of minutes now until we break.
The oversight is virtually non-existent. The type of FISA orders that we saw that were leaked by Snowden show a gross collection, a gross handing over, if you will, of phone metadata. Add that to the internet metadata and the potential for the NSA and others to get a hold of financial data of U.S. citizens, medical data of U.S. citizens, banking data of U.S. citizens. Now we have a mass of aggregated metadata that allows the government to see into individual lives. This is a tremendous threat to privacy and a travesty to the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution.
Yes, yeah, so maybe I should add here, we did not previously mention that in addition to communications over phones, both landlines and cell phones, and the internet, all sorts of internet collection besides emails, it appears that the administration also is collecting other government data on its citizens and bringing it together in databases so that they have a very full picture besides the communications. Julia Angwin had in the Wall Street Journal on December 13th of 2012, had a very insightful article about how all the agencies, including NSA, were giving their data to the National Counterterrorism Center. And they were able to troll through it for any reason at all. And this is another thing that you have to be very conscious of when listening to government assurances, NSA says very carefully often, we as NSA have only the right to go after foreign and very seldom domestic. But that doesn't mean that the National Counterterrorism Center can't go after it. And in fact, Angwin said that the NCTC can look for criminal information, or they can troll through it for any reason at all with no suspicion.
Yeah, another oversight issue was from October of 2001. For 4 months, no one on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court was even aware that this was going on. And then once it was brought to the attention of the FISA court judge, who was Colleen Kolar Kotelly, she was the only one that was bred into it. The remaining 10 judges on the FISA court were kept in the dark. She was the sole person from the judicial branch that was aware of the program.
So yes.
Whatever oversight that took place was her complete responsibility, no one else's.
That's correct. And there are many other things that we could consider here, and perhaps listeners would like to ask questions on it. But we're now at the bottom of the hour. This is Diane Rourke, your guest host, with Ed Loomis and J. Kirk Wiebe as guests, former NSA employees, and we are discussing domestic surveillance. Come back with your questions. Thank you.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. To learn how you can help, go to normal.org.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBS
Radio.com.
This is Diane Rourke, your guest host, back again with Ed Loomis and Kirk Wiebe, who were formerly at the National Security Agency, and we're discussing domestic surveillance. We have some questions, some people online wanting to ask questions, so let's proceed with that. Hello, is this Marie?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the show. What would you like to ask?
Well, I wanted to state that we had William Binney and Thomas Drake on the show last week, and I did have a chance to watch a very interesting documentary where William Binney was giving a lecture at something called the Keynote Hope Number 9 group, and he talked a lot about, he gave a very interesting slide presentation and talked about how this whole surveillance thing works in the program. But I was very interested in what he referred to as the EFF, as in Frank, EFF lawsuit that they're really trying to keep out of the Supreme Court, because he said what the reason he left the NSA is because he really exposed and is trying to make more transparent, but exposed to him that to them that he knew how many laws that they were actually breaking, how many ways in which they were going against the Constitution and the laws that are being broken by the NSA with these programs, and that's the reason they're trying to keep that EFF lawsuit out of the Supreme Court and away from the Supreme Court, because they know that most of it's all unconstitutional. So could you speak to that at all?
Yes, it's a very good question, Marie, and actually there's some very timely information that just came out yesterday. The Electronic Freedom Foundation initiated a lawsuit more than 4.5 years ago on the domestic surveillance, and they used as their evidence Mark Klein's information that the AT&T office in San Francisco was using a splitter to copy all the information coming in over the fiber optic lines. And so there was, since a lot of that was domestic information, it was kind of prima facie evidence that there was domestic surveillance. This has languished in the California courts and gone back and forth between the appeals court and the circuit judge several times. And yesterday, there was actually a preliminary decision. The government was trying to get it kicked out of court. And what the government has done, you are absolutely correct, they have mainly tried to keep this secret, in my personal opinion, because they don't want the courts to have it, because it is obviously unconstitutional, in my view. And so they're hiding it from the U.S. population and the U.S. courts far more than they are, I believe, from foreign terrorists who have very few other options for communicating anyway. And yesterday, this is the Jewell case, the Electronic Freedom Foundation's Jewell case. Yesterday, Judge White in California struck down the administration's claim that state secrets should ban them from suing the government. But on the other hand, it upheld the government's invocation of sovereign immunity. And in this way, they kicked out all but the constitutional issues on the First and Fourth Amendment and the separation of powers issues and a cause of action under the Fourth Amendment, which is illegal search. Kirk and Ed, would either of you like to join in this?
Okay, thank you.
I think you've covered it very, very aptly.
All right, thank you. Is there another question?
No, I was just amazed at how William Binney brought that out, and he said the amount of money that's being wasted as well in this lecture that he gave, he said it's just unbelievable. If the American people had any idea of how much money is being wasted on projects and programs, he said it's really all about the money, and they're just funding a huge, huge, well, it's just such an insult to the American people, really, the hardworking, tax-paying people of this country.
That's
so anyway, that was it. Thank you very much for the question. Thank you for your answer.
Thank you, Marie. And actually, the last point she brought up is the reason why, one of the reasons why we got in the government's gun sites. Kirk initiated an effort to get the Inspector General of the Department of Defense to investigate the waste of money on Trailblazer. And Kirk, do you want to say a few words about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, all I did was draft the words, and we all worked on it, you, Ed, myself, Bill Binney. And the issue was that General Hayden, who led NSA's modernization effort, absolutely ignored the issues we had solved with the thin thread prototype, including how to protect the identity of innocent people. But threw all that out in favor of a concept, which was literally that. No hardware, no software, just a concept. We all know what that's become. That's become the PRISM and the PSP and the TSP and all of these names that Snowden's been talking about. And that brings us up to where we are today. We launched an effort to write a complaint to the DODIG back in September 2002 to report on the corruption, the mismanagement, a literal circumvention of the federal acquisition regulation, which is the body of law that governs how agencies acquire major acquisitions and spend the public's money. All of that was circumvented to make contractors happy, create jobs, and it was all declared a disaster or a failure, let's call it.
Yes, after 2.5 years, the IG came back and basically said that all of our concerns were legitimate, but the NSA carefully kept the report classified so nobody could see it, because it was very embarrassing to them, because in addition to the ineffectiveness at the agency, they had also tried to stonewall the investigators.
Right.
And
right.
But then as soon as the New York Times leaked the existence of the program, the FBI went to the Department of Defense Inspector General and demanded the names of the people who had asked for the investigation. And they illegally gave them the names that were our names that were supposed to be protected.
In the Project on Government Oversight organization, POGO, filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, to have it unclassified and released, the report. And it was redacted. Somewhat and released. However, over
it was redacted almost completely.
The words are removed from, are blacked out from the report. However, there was one incriminating phrase that was left in that indicated that NSA management doctored the data that was provided to the Inspector General, and the Inspector General just raked them over the coals because of it.
Yes, anyway, in the end, we figure, I mean, it's our general estimate that Trailblazer wasted over $4 billion. So that wraps up that question, and I think we have Rock on line three.
Yes, hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Great. I have a question for all three of you, actually. Do you know if any of the information that they've been leaking, or if they've been metatabulizing, has any of that stuff been shared with any other nations, like maybe Israel or the United Nations, or because I've heard things down the line to where all of our gun owners' information has been forwarded to the United Nations, and all of the fire and police and military is all being connected together, and it's all being connected in with the United Nations. Can you guys elaborate on any of that?
I personally have no insight whatsoever. I mean, there is virtually no transparency in our government today, so whether that's happened or not, I have no idea.
But I would have to say that since Snowden revealed that we have 250 analysts using the information that the UK is sharing with us, and the UK is one of our very closest SIGINT partners, I would have to assume we are sharing some information with them. But like Ed said, there is no specific information out there. Kirk, do you have anything to say about that?
Just on the principle of sharing, we have a long history at NSA of sharing information with partners. and then it becomes a question, who is a partner? And some are closer, some are more distant. So those that are closer get more information. Those are that are more distant might get more cursory information, less detailed, for example. So it's completely within the realm of possibility and maybe even probability that we're sharing quite a bit of information with various partner organizations.
As for the gun issue, I saw a lot of that going around the internet over the months, and it appeared that it was connected primarily to whether we would sign an international treaty that would circumscribe U.S. gun rights, and we have not yet done that. However, as I said earlier, the Julia Angwin article indicated that federal data on U.S. citizens is from various agencies is being sent to the National Counterterrorism Center. And so it is possible that gun registration data from the states, for instance, is part of that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Diane. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. If there are no other questions, we can go on and discuss some of the other things that we wanted to get to. How about the danger to the Republic? There are a lot of people who kind of poo-poo this, and they say, gee, I don't have anything to hide. Now, my own personal opinion is that this gets us to one step away from a totalitarian state, because you can't basically have a file on everybody in the country and expect to maintain your freedom. And it doesn't matter whether it's Obama in power or whether it's Bush in power, whether it's somebody you like or somebody you don't like. Eventually, it is going to be abused. And we, frankly, feel that we were the first ones to be abused, that we were basically political enemies because we had opposed both Trailblazer and we had also opposed Stellar Wind. And it was used against us. In fact, Alberto Gonzalez said at one point that the system would be used against leakers. So we're virtually positive that it was used against us. And maybe, Kirk and Ed, you want to talk about that. Is there a real danger? Are the people who, in your opinion, who are very much less concerned and think that terrorism justifies this, are they right?
Yeah, if you don't mind, let me begin by saying that, first of all, look what's happened. We have people in government who have quite willingly shown the propensity to change the rules that we were all taught in school and raised with over the years, and that includes the Constitution. And they didn't ask the American people. They just went and did it. The Supreme Court had no role in it. There is a way to amend the Constitution. It was circumvented completely. So, and look at what happened in the IRS going after certain political groups. All I'm saying is, if people in positions of authority are willing to change the game rules, then you and I don't know what the new rules are, especially when they have secret legislation like the Patriot Act, Section 215. So there's an extreme danger that's emerging here, and none of us quite know what the new rules are. So when people say, I'm not worried, guess what? You're not making up the rules. Someone else is.
Yeah, let me add to that that President Obama stated on 7th of June, one of the things that we're going to have to discuss and debate is how were we striking this balance between the things to keep the American people safe and our concerns about privacy, because there are some trade-offs involved, and I welcome this debate. Now, I wish Ben Franklin were here serving as his privacy czar, drumming his oft-quoted February 1775 statement, they who could give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now, if President Obama really is serious about seeking a public debate on this balance issue, I would welcome him placing it as an issue before a nationwide referendum in each state in the upcoming 2014 general congressional election.
Right. And let's say right now, for the audience, make no mistake, there is no technical reason on earth to sacrifice one bit of privacy in order to gain any security, because we know how to do that in terms of how one goes about analyzing large amounts of data and protecting the privacy of innocent people.
Yes, as we said previously, encryption and tracking people's access to the database could very effectively do this. We have only a couple of minutes left, and we have Joanne on line three.
For having this program. I have a couple questions revolving around this money issue that someone brought up earlier. And it connected to the Clapper lying to Congress. Why is there not an uproar, or why is Pacey not being charged? It's a crime when you lie to Congress. Number two, the all these heads of these different intelligence agencies, can someone speak to the revolving door of these heads of agencies and commercial companies? And
okay, I'll take the first part of that, the perjury part. I assume that Mr. Clapper was under oath. I don't think that in that case it was, I believe, the Senate Intelligence Committee. Is that correct, Ed? Yes, and so the problem is that the intelligence committees, as well as the judiciary committees, all of whose members were read into this after 2005, all of them are protecting their history of oversight, so-called oversight. They let this go on for 12 years, and they have obligingly passed laws to initiate it and passed laws to do whatever the administration wanted to enhance those powers. And they are basically defending their own careers. I don't think they're going to say that he has perjured himself or do anything to him, frankly. They are part and parcel of the problem.
The congressmen or the senators don't have to do it. We have a Justice Department. I mean, a law was broken.
The Justice Department was part and parcel of it, too. They, after the so-called rebellion in the hospital in which Comey, who is now going to almost certainly fly through to become the new attorney general, he objected that it was not legal. And so he's gotten a lot of fame for that. But let's face what happened. What he did was, he simply got the FISA court to agree to twist the language in existing law to so-called legalize exactly what they were doing. He did not actually change the content of the program much at all.
Yeah, and if I can insert, Joanne, your concern is spot on. We have a relationship, an incestuous relationship, that's working against the people, and we have to get this changed. We have to phone, write, call, demonstrate, whatever it takes.
Okay. And the other one was about the revolving door, about these heads of the agencies. They're retired military, and then they sit on corporate boards. And then I read in the article the other day about one of the former NSA directors is now with a private equity firm that's doing of raising money for the security activities.
Absolutely.
The problem we have with our financial industry is the revolving door, but now we see it here in the intelligence and security industry.
Yeah, it's across government. It is.
Okay. Well, I thank you. I wish there'd be more reporting about that in the mainstream press. I mean, I thank you for having this on this internet radio, but the general public needs to read about that in your regular Washington Post or Times, et cetera.
The Washington Post actually did do a long series by Dana. I'm trying to think of her last name. About the big explosion in contractors, and there are very lucrative jobs available for anyone with a clearance who leaves government. And so I think we're at the end of our time almost, and I would just like to end with a plea to listeners to do something about this. And I think that there are many things that you can do about it. And Congress will not get serious about protecting our privacy unless they hear from their constituents. That's the first place you can start. You can start by educating your friends, your neighbors, your children. You can emphasize the need to protect your privacy online. And guys, you want to chip in about with your own ideas?
Yeah, I would suggest that you make your congressman's past privacy stance a key issue in his or her re-election campaign in the coming years, and support the opposition if this issue strikes at your heart. Support pro-privacy candidates in both the primary and the general elections. Otherwise, apathy is going to win out every time. If you're an active computer user, I would avoid using the cloud and minimize the use of services provided by any technology company that supports the PRISM program through the supply of metadata. One other suggestion, do not use encryption of any form. Communications containing encrypted data automatically are flagged for special examination and are subject to permanent retention by NSA, not subject to NSA's five-year retention restriction. Mm-hmm. Further, the FBI considers any storage media containing encrypted data automatically to be contraband, so you'll never get it back.
Contraband?
Yes, your computer, that happened to us. They seized our computers and we can't get them back because they claim there is either classified information on it or information that is unclassified but that NSA has not officially released.
Oh, I'd like to bring up a point. You know, all of a sudden you're talking about privacy and then the government is saying, oh, this is to protect us, to get the criminals, et cetera. Well, you know, there's more than just killing people, but there's that hurts the country. It's this big financial crisis. Now, if they're listening and picking up all this communications, and why aren't they able to use that to bring cases against these titans of Wall Street and make their case and get prosecutions and send them to jail?
Well, I don't think you can rule that out. I think that it's very tempting for them to use something that they claim is a national security device only. And as I said, the National Counterterrorism Center can troll through this database from all government agencies and for criminal purposes also.
Right, but they're not doing it for the...
Well, let me tell you, if they do it, you never find out because they will not... It could be, it is possible it's behind some of those cases that they have brought, and you will never find out. Even in court, they will not give it to you. If you institute a FOIA and ask for your file, they will say it is national security data and they don't have to release it.
Well, I'm just looking at the outcome. We don't have these titans of industry, the financial industry, spending time in jail. That's where I'm coming from.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think we're at the end of our time right now, and
okay,
so I would like to thank all the listeners for joining us, and this is Diane Rourke, your guest host, and I want to thank Ed Loomis and Kirk Wiebe from the National Security Agency, who have retired from the National Security Agency after many years of service, and thank them for their whistleblowing and for helping to educate the United States citizenry. And we will now sign off. Goodbye. Thanks.
Thank you.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the stable by the relief of fast summer people, and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land made for you and me.